Welcome to the Department of Homelander Security, the officially unofficial podcast for the boys on Amazon Prime. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 3, Episode 7, titled Here Comes a Candle to Light You to Bed. Aaron, are you familiar with what the title of this episode is all about?
I am, but only because I looked it up.
Same.
Are you?
I'm not English. I'm very much not English. And so I did not know that this was kind of a children's nursery rhyme with a dark twist.
A lot of them are like that, you know?
Sure.
Like Ring Around the Rosie is about dying of the pox and little Bonnie Fufu's picking up field mice and bopping them. It's just psychotic shit children are coming up with.
How does that happen?
You know what? It's the adults. There's no way a kid comes up with oranges and lemons, says the bells of St. Clemens. There's no way. That kind of sophisticated verbal play. So the point is, at the end of this whole thing, which is talking about all the bells you can hear in London and making Cockney rhyming slangs out of all of them, it says, here comes a candle to light you to bed, and here comes a chopper to chop off your head. Chip, chop, chip, chop, the last man is dead. And I guess the way you do this is you line up children in a row and they're the last persons make a hand bridge and all the kids kind of like, you know, round robin go through that. On that last line, the kids put their hands down and they trap whoever's inside and that then they brutally murdered them.
Yeah. Like violent and musical chairs.
This was only outlawed in the UK in 2015. They're still doing it in Wales. Killing children at the end of these things. So it's clearly this is the line before the big thing happens, and the big thing is going to be the finale.
Yeah.
And it looks like, what do you think is going to, I mean, what do you see the shape of the board going into this final episode?
I don't know. I mean, until like the very last scene of this episode, I was thinking, oh, well, maybe the chopper is going to chop off Homelander's head, but it doesn't seem like there is a chopper anymore, right? I mean, the only choppers are, well, I guess they're butchers. There are butchers out there. They do a lot of chopping. So who knows? But yeah, they kind of change up the state of the game in this episode.
I think the address that they find, that's that Minnesota address. I looked it up. It's in the middle of nowhere. I'm thinking that's the safe house they're keeping Ryan at.
Sure.
And you're going to have a grandfather, father, son chop fest hosted by Billy Butcher next episode.
Yeah.
But we'll see. That seems like the way they're going. Poor Ryan. He doesn't deserve any of this.
Yeah. And at this point, it's like kind of tough to tell where everybody's allegiances lie, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. This wasn't my favorite episode. I thought stylistically it was a pretty big departure from the boys, stuff they've done in the past. Yeah, the flashbacks. I mean, we got some really good information on both Black Noir and Butcher's past that I appreciated, but it didn't quite do it for me stylistically. I will say I'm also not super into the boys being so split up this season. It feels like we've got, you know, three groups here, which one is Starlight on her own, and then you got Butcher and Huey out there doing their own thing, and then Mother's Milk just came back together with another group that was out there with Frenchie and Kimiko. I don't know. It doesn't feel like the boys are back in town, which is kind of how I always want this show to feel.
Yeah, maybe it feels a little like Empire Strikes Back-y, where the main group is split up and they've suffered a pretty big, you know, suffered a series of defeats and they're on the run and they're trying to turn it all, you know, turn it all around.
Felt to me like a side mission, right? Like, look, we've got this main mission to kill Homelander, but we've got to humor this soldier boy guy who's going around doing things and dragging us, you know, across the country looking for his old enemies. That's felt a little bit like a side mission to me.
Yeah, it is a little Mandalorian-ish.
This episode with the Mindstorm stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, it makes sense. It's a quid pro quo. Like Soldier Boy's like, yeah, I want you to help me get even with my enemies and I'll help you get even with yours. I mean, now that's all out the window, I think, that he knows he's a son, although.
Right.
Soldier Boy's a son of a bitch. Sure. The idea that he might, you know, that just be fucking with Homelander. And I don't think he's fucking with him in terms of him being a son. That seems I think that's true. The show shot it like, so we don't exactly know what Mindstorm told him. But I think that all tracks. I just don't know that Soldier Boy is going to have any kind of normal reaction to fatherhood. Just like Homelander did not last season.
Sure. Yeah.
But there's a lot of like abnormal father meditation. Like Billy Butcher's father was not normal. I guess I don't know. I really like the father son stuff that they're doing in this season. And I'm excited to see what the multi-generational combat's going to look like next episode. Or at least I think that's what's happening. I could be egg on my face, but.
Yeah. And I suppose you did need to like reset a little bit after Herogasm, right? Not every episode can be Herogasm. You need to do a little like work in between. And I don't know. This one felt like. My limit of legwork had been reached.
You didn't like the animation. It seems like that's another thing. Like the flat,
it didn't feel right to me. But I don't know. Black Noir is a weirdo, so
he is a weirdo. It does track with what we know. The little snippets of his personality that we have gotten. The fact I remember last season when he went to wipe out that super terrorist cell and there is a child left there with a stuffed animal and he does a little pantomime to kind of reassure the child. He seems like the experiences that he went through with Soldier Boy made him regress to where, you know, any morality and sense of self-worth he has is contained into some kind of, I don't know, bizarre Chuck E. Cheese showbiz pizza thing. I thought, I was like, yeah, it's different, but is it any different than Patton Oswalt talking? You know, like this is this season's Patton Oswalt being the gills, right?
Yeah.
You know, talking anthropomorphic-ized gills. So
Yeah. And I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it wasn't doing it for me. But, you know, I'm sure next episode will blow my mind as they have in every previous season's finale.
Also, probably budget saving. Like they had a pretty intense battle that was really bloody and violent with a lot of moving parts and a lot of special effects. And they did it all with traditional animation. So.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Herogasm. Like they shot their wad with Herogasm.
Well, they did, and which is why they had to, get out the Crayola for this episode.
Okay, so it seems like you were pretty positive on the episode.
I thought it's a great penultimate episode. It sets the board beautifully for what I think is going to be. But I mean. Last season was a little New Hopey. You had the Death Star of Stormfront and everybody wanted to see that thing destroyed and it looks like it was, and Homelander was on the run, and this is the Empire Strikes Back season. So it's maybe not as much fun to watch because the good guys are doing a bunch of shady shit and getting their asses kicked, but I don't know.
I was expecting something more dramatic than the Darth Vader, I am your father twist from Soldier Boy.
Oh, shit. Like, it's literally Empire Strikes Back. Oh, my God.
Is, yeah.
All right.
I don't know. Yes, it's dramatic, but it's like kind of cliched, too. I was expecting something more thematic to the boys. Like there was this idea that, you know, you've got this soup who can depower other soups, and I'll be a little disappointed if all they do with that is scare Homelander a little bit. If it's just that one day that Maeve's talking about, her third best day in the world, where she saw Homelander scared.
I don't know what they're going to do with Homelander, because Homelander depowered I don't think is super interesting. Homelander dead is certainly not interesting. I mean, it feels like the culmination of the show, but... Yeah, I don't know. I'm worried about what this. I'm worried every way. Like, will Homelander jump the shark if they keep him around because he's such a good foil? Will they be able to create a new foil in time?
I don't know. I think Homelander depowered is the most interesting option. I think it's the most interesting for the boys because they have a conundrum. Do they now kill just a mortal man who can no longer threaten anybody? Does Homelander, you know what, go to Vought and try and get some compound V to repower?
They just showed a way that he could get depowered and come back, right?
Sure, but would they give it to him? Like, do they want Homelander in that position, or would they rather have somebody else? I mean, there's a lot of drama around the idea of a Homelander depowered that I think is more interesting than a Homelander who has a super powered father. But, well, you know,
in response to that, I'm not a fan of the comic, and I'm not a fan. I'm just saying I've not actually read the comics. I might do so once we're done with our coverage of the show, because it seems pretty interesting. But when I hear that the title is The Boys, And there's all these, like you're saying, they're cliched to introduce, like, everybody's father, you know, like, oh, you know, Homelander is all about his relation. It feels like maybe that's intentional. The boys, is, yeah. It feels like this, like, oh, it's just the boys, it's the lads. But like, I think it's like maybe a meditation on how young men get fucked up and sure. the different pressures. And like, it starts to make me think about like Soldier Boy. Like Vought is trying to always course correct from their latest disaster. So Soldier Boy is this cruel, amoral, hypocritical fucker. And they know that's a problem, right? And they've lost control of him. So they create a new child in the lab. And we don't know a lot about how Homelander was raised, but we do know that he was like given a steady diet. Like he was a good boy, given a steady diet of heroic things to watch and to aspire to. Mm-hmm. And also a lot of strict cruelty to like enforce this rigid code upon him. And like any psychiatrist will tell you that the opposite of crazy is crazy. And I think that Homelander is the opposite crazy from Soldier Boy.
Sure.
And that suggests that maybe Ryan, or at least, you know, what stability and normalcy that Becca gave would be the synthesis between those two, would be the healthy, integrated superhero that might actually be worth a goddamn. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, the only way that would be interesting is to show to jump forward 10, 15 years and have Ryan be a new, improved Homelander. But I think that's kind of like broad strokes what they're going or the things that they're exploring. And I think in addition to being bloody and fun and all that other stuff, I'm always tempted to underestimate the boys. And I remember like...
Sure.
Last season, the final two episodes really like elevated the boys into something that like, God, this is like one of the shows I'm most excited to see back. And I'm curious to see if the season 3 finale kind of gives me those same vibes.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Well, why don't we talk in detail about this episode before we get to the finale?
Let's do it.
All right, we start off with some clips of Ashley on the VOD News Network trying to spin Starlight's message against her, and dropping some facts that may or may not actually be facts. Like, I don't know, child trafficking.
Well, she runs a halfway house for teens, at-risk teens. I mean, that's just suspect, right? Who would want to help those type of people if not for an ulterior motive? It's all grooming and the cheese pizza and all that good stuff, yeah.
Of course. Then the legend says that Soldier Boy is just like all the other heroes. He's rotten. He's talking to Huey here. But we find out that Soldier Boy likes the older ladies. They're like fine wine for him. And Butcher's having Butcher's having trouble finding Soldier Boy's other former teammates, specifically Mindstorm. And Huey suggests, well, why don't we look for pharmacies that are supplying his bipolar meds? Because it's not super common. Man, I love Paul Reiser. I think the best thing that the boys has done this season is invite Paul Reiser to be a guest star. Because every episode he's in, he's fantastic.
His reaction
Soldier Boy did for singing what Pantyhose did for finger fucking is such a good line.
Yeah, his general reaction, like Huey running in and being like, Soldier Boy says we're out of Astroglide. He's really, really good at being, because like the thing is he is Soldier Boy without the powers, right? He wishes he were Soldier Boy.
Sure, I bet he does.
But he also is capable of being annoyed by the chaos. I mean, that's the thing of these supers. It's like, even when they're not trying to kill you, it's just they have these extreme personalities and no one can tell them anything because they're too powerful. It just really, so like, yeah, the fact that he's just a hassle. He's like the worst roommate, but you can't kick him out. Uh-huh. He's smoking all your weed. He's banging your cocktail. He's banging your housekeepers two at a time. Yeah. Superpowered Fredo is what this guy is.
Oh, God, you're right. There's also a moment here where Butcher compliments Huey for this idea to search for their prescription meds. He's been softening on Huey this whole time. And I feel like this stuff that they do at the beginning of this episode, complimenting him, makes it worse when he decides not to tell Huey how the V24 is affecting them.
It just goes to show what kind of influence Butcher has. Like, they have fully embraced this pseudo brother on both ends. Mm-hmm. And Huey just, like, you know, it looks like a wilted flower being watered when Butcher gives him an attaboy for, you know, the heads up playing the lithium. But, you know, and that's the thing that's sad, because like at the end of this episode, if Butcher says, you know, Huey, we have to come up with a new plan as V is killing us, Huey'd listen to him.
Sure. He's doing the same thing he did. Like I said, I like thematically what they're doing, even if I didn't care for it super stylistically, because that Lenny stuff really, like, as soon as he wakes up and does the shit that he does, you're just like, you learned nothing. God damn it, you learned nothing, man. You just had the most visceral experience you could have in your entire life, and it did not change you. You're a lost cause.
Yeah, but maybe he's learning the wrong lesson. Like, the lesson before was, well, he abandoned Lenny to a tough situation without any support, and now he's... I guess if V wasn't killing you, that would work, because maybe now it's like, well, I can't abandon Huey on the last minute of his quest and leave him to the, you know, clutches of Homelander. But, yeah, the idea that, like, for both of them, the next dose could be the thing, one that kills them. Is what changes the balance on that.
Butcher's one dose up on him, right? So I think, like,
he is.
Huey's maybe at two, right?
I think he's two going on three. Butcher's three going on four. Maybe four going on five, actually.
Maybe. Because
I think he did it twice before Huey discovered that he was doing it. Or maybe Huey discovered him on the second one. Either way, they're both in the red line.
Yep.
Does this show survive without Butcher?
I don't know, man.
He's like kind of the linchpin for me.
60% of why I watch this show.
It's Anthony Starr, yep. And it's Fuckface Aowen, Aomer. Why can't I think of this guy's name?
Butcher's dad?
No, Butcher. Butcher himself.
Oh, okay. Not the
Judge Dredd. Who plays this guy? Carl Urban. Thank you, Jesus.
Yeah.
Those two guys, like, if that's what I'm saying, like, without Billy Butcher and without Homelander, I don't know what the show is.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to find, I mean, to me, Homelander's death would be the end of the series. It would be the crowning achievement. But I'm also in a point in season three, where I don't also see how they get like another season or two with Homelander in the picture.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, because like you kill Homelander, I mean, Vought's still out there doing their shit, right? So, and they can always create another Homelander. So,
but it's not an instantaneous process, right? Because like, right, like there's something about, yeah. Well, I don't know, with the Temp V, because like the fact that I always thought that you had to get V at a young age for it to be fully effective. Mm-hmm. Maybe not, because the other thing is, it seemed like when they gave it to Kimiko, it had the exact same effect, and she's going to have the exact same powers, and yeah. No worse for wear. So
I don't maybe know if they could, because she already had like this genetic, let's say, genetic preparation right. When she was younger, or
right.
If that it would blew be the case for anybody, but
it blew the V out of her, but the like lattice work of the V was still there.
Something, who knows?
But it's all it's pseudoscience. Yeah, who knows?
So I don't know. Well, we'll see. I would be interested to see if they try to keep this series alive beyond Homelander, but you're right. Like, to me, it's Butcher and Homelander is like the number one and two reasons to watch the show.
I guess the other thing would be like maybe Homelander is the mini boss and then Stan Edgar is the boss.
Yeah.
Cause like killing Stan Edgar, I think would be, that's putting a stake in the heart of Vought, right? I don't think Vought recovers.
I don't think Ashley can run Vought. No.
Well, yeah, right. Not yeah, because like that's another point. Like at the top, you have to have someone smart or sane, or the whole thing doesn't work. You can have a whole bunch of lieutenants running around gibbering, flinging shit, but the person at the top the person at the top orchestrating it has to be relatively sane, or just it's not going to work.
Yeah. Okay, Homelander goes to Maeve's cell to ask where Butcher and Soldier Boy are hiding. He tells Maeve that the boys are going around depowering supers, and thinks like Maeve's going to react negatively to that, but she doesn't. She's like, yeah, I don't want to be one anyway. And he tells her, okay, that's fine, but I'm going to harvest your eggs and make super babies later. It's
very, very, very narrow definition of forcing himself on her.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Harvesting your eggs and your Jedi material, no biggie.
And this is the scene where Maeve says, this is the third best day of my life, or one of the top three, because I got to see you scared, which that's something we never see.
And I like the fact that like her first clue is him wearing concealer.
Yeah,
you know, he's trying to hide a black eye. Yeah. Which shows, you know, why would he care? Well, I mean, because he's trying to lie to the public, right? Uh-huh. Why is he lying to the public? Because it's an interest. Because if he was on the up and up, he'd just show up and be like, yeah, it's how to fight a Soldier Boy. It's a fight of my life. Everyone should be afraid, but we're going to handle it.
Right. Fought him 3-on-1. They didn't kill me. So
I've often wondered, like, what's the appropriate official response to a truly existential threat? Like, you know, if like an asteroid was coming in a week and we missed it and there is no way to dodge it and it's going to wipe out half the Earth, like, what is the appropriate thing to tell the world? You want them to tell you the truth, right?
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that might make the last week of your life a hell for some people.
For a lot of people, to be honest. I don't know. Oh, it might be beautiful. Everybody comes together at the end. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, there will be half of the people who lose their mind and go out there and do all sorts of terrible things, and the other half of the people who are preyed on by those people. And there will be everything in between, too, but yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying, and that's the thing. It's like, whichever way it goes, because like, who knows, maybe 99% of the people just join hands and sing Kumbaya. We're robbed of the choice either way. Like if they don't tell you the truth, you're, who knows, like maybe 99% of us would turn into fucking Mad Max, the Purge type of shit, or but we'll never know because they would lie to us.
Right. I'd go up on the tallest tower in the city I live in and have a rooftop party.
Yeah, the Independence Day approach, sure.
Uh-huh. I finally use my Nintendo Switch the way Nintendo intended me to at rooftop parties. That's a very niche video gamer joke, but hopefully some people got it. Anyway, Kimiko and Frenchie show up at MM's place to help, but they are not in great shape. I forget exactly what happened with Frenchie last episode. He went on a bender, right?
Yeah, and he's just been through a lot, and he is going back to, I think maybe little Nina got him started, but he's continuing the role just because he just can't deal.
Yeah.
I also thought that this
depowered to beat up.
I also thought this is a subtle dig at Homelander dismantling the VOT security analysis department. Because holy shit, Butcher and everybody's just hanging out at Mother's Milk's apartment. Uh-huh. Like if he just cracks a phone book and looks at like Butcher's known associates and visits like four or five apartments, he's got him dead to rights. But right. He's too stupid, lazy, and the people that would have been in their job to do, he's fired them all. So he can do nothing but threaten Maeve with, you know, toothless threats about revealing their location.
It does.
The legend.
Wonder.
Holy shit, the legend. Like, you don't have the known account. You're not going to check that. Like, it's just, I thought it was, any other show, I'd say it's bad writing, but Homelander is this stupid, obtuse, and has destroyed his crime, you know, identification system. So I thought it was more of explicit, like, yeah, he's done fucked up.
Yeah, makes sense. Butcher's crew tracks Mindstorm to his cabin, where Soldier Boy tells them not to look into his eyes for reasons. And Huey finds out that Soldier Boy has PTSD and Butcher's helping him self-medicate with bag loads of weed, trash bags full of weed. And then they both shoot up V-24 again.
Yeah, and there's an explicit parallel between self-medicating and the temp V.
Yeah.
I like the sweet Tarantino trunk angle. Mm-hmm. Always love it. Always love it when the protagonists are open a trunk and talking about the dangerous mission from the trunk's POV as they're suiting up and getting ready. What is the joke about parking 2 miles away, though? Was this just a commentary on how remote Mindstorm's cabin is? Or I didn't get it because they're like, oh, we're 2 miles due east. And Butcher's like, we couldn't have parked closer.
Was Huey driving? And he's the teleporting guy, so maybe he didn't consider like how far away they are because he knew he just teleported.
I don't know. It could just be Butcher being Butcher and saying some stupid shit just to antagonize Huey. But I was waiting for it to pay off, and it never kind of did. Maybe it's just an excuse to like, well, how could they plausibly get Mindstorm far enough away from Soldier Boy, who's presumably could run at super speed to where it would be a minute or two before he'd get back to their location. Right. Even if you're running at 45, 50 miles an hour, it's still going to take you a couple minutes to cover that ground.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's probably why they did it. And then we go to Black Noir hiding out in an abandoned restaurant where animated animals tell him that they're going to help him through his trauma. And he can't hide from Soldier Boy forever.
Do you know who the voice of Buster Beaver is?
God, it sounds so familiar, but no.
I actually thought it might be Patton Oswalt doing a little bit brighter. Like, they're just like, oh, they'll call him back for two voiceovers in a row. It's this guy named Eric Bauza, who is a pretty prolific. Like, he does the current Daffy Duck, Bugs Bunny, Tweety Bird. Okay. He's done a bunch of other characters that I recognize from, like, Fairly Odd Parents and stuff. I didn't write him down. But no, he's just a really talented and prolific Canadian voice actor.
There are modern day Daffy Duck, Tweety Bird
cartoons. Yeah, Mel Blanc died, dude. They got a
Oh, no, I mean, no, they just did Space Jam, Space Jam 2.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
And they still trot them out for commercials and shorts and stuff, I think. Okay. But yeah, you gotta have somebody doing it.
Yeah, I forgot about Space Jam 2, but boy, I haven't seen a Looney Tunes thing in a long time.
So this is a sad commentary on the state of black noir. It seemed like this is some kind of ritual he's done before. This is like Miss Havisham's showbiz pizza. It's all cobwebbed and decrepit, and there's a plate and a setting, like a birthday party kind of thing. And it seems like whenever he gets down in his feelings, he comes there, opens up a can of beans for his imaginary friends to eat, because there's like the detritus of all this stuff that's happened before. And it looks like he's done it several times. But yeah, this is cuckoo shit, man. Like,
oh yeah.
Multiple times the episode, they also like pull away to remind us that this is not happening anywhere but between this guy's two burnt up mangled ears. I thought it was really fun and effective.
Okay. I mean, to each their own, sure. It certainly can be. I don't know that I needed the pull away shots where they showed that he's just imagining this. Like, when I see characters seeing it, like real life characters seeing animated characters, I'm like, oh, their mind has been fried.
Yeah, especially in this kind of show. Like, this isn't Roger Rabbit. I do think when they did that, it was supposed to be a laugh. But I don't know. There's like tonal jarring to this stuff, because it's like really traumatic stuff. But yeah, every once in a while, they're like, huh, look, that's how I interpret it. They're pulling back to show us it's not real. I don't think we needed a reminder, so it must be kind of like, isn't that funny? Or like, look how deluded this guy is.
Or just even extra dark, like you just see this dude sitting in a restaurant that's totally empty, totally silent, just looking at the wall. I mean, there's a darkness and it's kind of scary seeing that.
It makes me wonder the mechanism of like, how is he remembering these things that he hasn't been able to remember before? Is it just through an effort of will? Is this a form of like family dynamics therapy, internal family dynamics therapy? Is this the one kind of dark twist I've got to this? Is this Stan Egger somehow putting Black Noir up to this, manipulating him somehow, and having this new revelation it's not true? Because like I don't understand like why hanging out a showbiz pizza, an abandoned showbiz pizza, would allow you to unlock previously repressed memories. Or maybe I'm overthinking it because it's the fucking boys and not like Mad Men.
Yeah, or maybe I'm not familiar enough with what's come before this, but are they necessarily repressed memories, or is this just something
Bucky Beaver says as much. He's like, I know this is rough, and you've been I forget how he said, like, you've been fighting or you've been resisting thinking about it. Maybe it's stuff that he's known all along, and he's just intentionally not dwelled on it because somehow he's turned like his rage and betrayal for Vought into like almost worship of Homelander and Vought and Stan Edgar. So
yeah,
maybe the return of, and that's the other thing that Bucky Beaver said. It's like, you knew when you betrayed him to the Russians that he would one day be back. So maybe this is triggering the ruminations. I don't know.
We're going to see a lot more of this animation as we get deeper into the episode, have a little more talked about, but
sure.
Let's keep going here. Soldier Boy is exhibiting signs of paranoia. He's like, did you say something? Nope, said nothing. And Butcher's brain is apparently leaking from the V-24. They walk into Mindstorm's booby trap, which ends up trapping Butcher in one of his memories. And Soldier Boy says they have to keep going. They leave Butcher behind.
Yeah, he's trapped in an endless nightmare, they describe it, of this situation with his mom and his dad and his brother Lenny. Mm-hmm. I meant to point this out last week, because Huey had his brains leaking out. I didn't like because he had the scene where he like checked his ear and there was stuff in it. I thought that was some kind of blood or gore that he had sustained from the battle that he was in or from the situation.
Yeah.
But it seems like, no, this is a side effect of the V. I don't know what exactly it is, but it's gross. It's black oil.
Good. Just, you know, a heads up for people out there. It's never good when you start bleeding out of the ears.
Yeah, especially when your blood is
of, yeah, I'm healthy and
black tar. Yeah, that's not good too.
Yeah.
Any if black stuff is coming out of any of your orifices, you should probably get it checked out.
Okay. So let's get to this hallucination or this walk through memory lane. Butcher is protecting his younger brother from his abusive father in this nightmare memory he's trapped in. And we don't see exactly why it's a nightmare memory until later in the episode, but it starts off pretty bad. You got his brother, Lenny. I think this is the scene where he's hiding in the closet from their dad, who has come home very probably pissed, probably angry. And Butcher gets his attention so that he won't find Lenny.
Yeah.
And takes a beating for it.
I did like the heartwarming thing that they were doing before the really traumatic shit started was he's teaching his brother like three card Bonnie.
Sure.
Like how to hustle on the street, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I like this stuff. Again, stylistically, I was like, man, they're okay, these flashback things. I guess I'll go with it. I've seen it in other shows and liked it. I just haven't seen it much in this show, but that's fine.
Gotcha.
We go back to MM's house where Frenchie is just in too deep on weed, pain, recovering from his bender and lack of sleep, and MM's trying to keep him upright while Starlight shares a first drink, well, Kimiko's first drink with her, and Kimiko asks her to help her get her powers back with some permanent V from Vought, and she's reluctant, but she has this message, which we don't get to see exactly what it says here, but we will later. When they also pretty much convinces Starlight to do it.
They also had this, because like if you've forgotten, Frenchie's an expert in all like drugs, and I think especially like weaponizing them, aerosoling them. And they thought that this was halothane, which is a powerful anesthetizing agent, a gas. And Frenchie realizes that it's not. Like, so it's not that Mother's Milk was on the wrong track of incapacitating Soldier Boy. Because we had that question, like, well, using the wrong substance. So even three sheets to the wind, Frenchie is still a very talented pharmacological chemist. And he's going to, by the end of this episode, crack the case.
Yeah. Soldier Boy tells Huey to get hard. And Huey tries to call him out about not being the hero he pretends to be. But he just gets punched in the jaw for his trouble. There's a pretty violent punch. And it's out of nowhere. Which, I don't know. I like the characterization they're doing with Soldier Boy in these little moments, you know. Of course, like him banging housemaids two at a time is characterization, but I feel like these are the more effective moments where he just lashes out to get his way without really
silencing.
Any provocation, right? He's like, the provocation is about to begin and he realizes it, so he just punches him.
Yeah, the provocation is saying, well, you're a liar. You're actually, all this pep talk stuff is bullshit, and he whops him for it. It made me think, like, is it really true that he didn't have any part in like World War II or any actual heroic part? And if so, why not? Why wouldn't Vought put him on the front lines?
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like he could be killed.
That's the thing. Cowardly superheroes who are basically invincible, as far as we can tell, seem kind of ridiculous. I don't know why they would be so cowardly if they truly felt that they were as powerful as they are.
Yeah. Well, we've certainly seen some shocking displays of cowardice in our day from people who were way powerful. It's seemingly powerful enough to stop an evil act.
Sure.
I just thought, as it says, my first reaction is like, well, maybe Paul Reiser was bullshitting us, but I don't think that's, I think this is, he's literally the perversion of everything Captain America is, you know. Captain America's a true blue hero, actually did fight the Nazis, was elevated after already being a quality human being, and Soldier Boy is just the inverse of all of that.
Yeah, seems like it. All right, the Deep delivers the good news to his wife that he's going to be on some shitty talk show with a romantic encounter. he's laid out flower petals and the whole nine yards, romantic music. And he also says he wants to spice things up in the bedroom by introducing a third partner to their sex life, which is his pet octopus. And, you know, you got to give it to her. She gives it a shot. She just can't go through with it. They argue, and then she leaves him to manage his own career for a while.
Yeah, this is the aftershocks of Herogasm.
Uh-huh.
Get to see some octo sucking, some borderline hentai shit happen. No, this is just full on.
This is a third time. This is a third time this season he's fucked an octopus.
It's true. He's really got a thing for mollusks.
Mm-hmm.
So do you? We didn't get to see the fallout from this, but she says she's not going to help him with his PR anymore. He has gotten to the peak delusion stage where he doesn't think he fucking needs it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm predicting that we're going to open up next episode with like an epic flame out fail of an interview where he just, but sure. I don't know what that would even, maybe that's the point they're going to make, that he is going to have that and people love it anyway, because I have, and I have seen many times in the last decade, things like, well, there's no fucking way they're coming back from this. And once it goes through the spin wash machine, it comes out like that's either not important or it's getting ignored or it's it. So like maybe that will be the final dark political joke that they play, that like it doesn't even matter. It doesn't even really matter to a certain extent, the crazy shit you say.
Yeah. All that matters is the money and influence that you have.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see.
But we're going to find out. We're going to find out how well he does without her.
Yeah. Black Noir, we're back to him and his animated friends putting on a play of him getting his ass kicked by Soldier Boy over a movie part that he didn't get.
Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, Beverly Hills Cop.
I mean, maybe, okay, I don't want to side with Soldier Boy. Maybe Black Noir can be funny. Can he be as funny as Eddie Murphy at the height of his powers, though? This is arrogance. He needed to be stopped.
I agree. I don't think he has a Ice Cube chance in hell of getting that part, regardless of whether or not he wants it.
I don't know. Maybe we got robbed of comedic talent when they shot him full of V. But yeah, boy, he beats the holy hell out of Black Noir in this scene, and it's not even close to the beating he gets later in the episode.
Oh.
And then you also see why the team. The payback, why they fucking hated this guy, because if Black Noir is one of the strongest of the members, and it seems like he is, like you can only imagine the petty shit he did. I mean, he's beating the shit out of Gunpowder.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like, yeah, like there's more evidence that like the sexual side of the abuse was kind of fabricated, but 100% Soldier Boy abused the kid.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I look payback. That Homelander has done to his crew, and I just transfer that over, right? Like, Soldier Boy isn't a better guy than Homelander.
Homelander might be slightly better than Soldier Boy, though. I don't know. Like I said, it's like, maybe he'll get there, but like, it seems like Homelander manipulates and intimidates and threatens more than just like beats the shit out of you for looking at him wrong.
Yeah, no, it's a trade-off, right? I mean, I think Homelander is more powerful, or certainly was more powerful than Soldier Boy before he got his depowering powers.
Yeah.
But also, he can be manipulated. You know, he can be controlled in a way that I don't think Soldier Boy can, because Soldier Boy doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned the depowering, because like that's something that I don't think about until the show makes me. But like, it's implied that the Russians did that to him.
Uh-huh.
So if they did it once, they could do it again. That might be a hook for season four. If Butcher like rejects the power of Compound V for the anti-V, they're able to get that so they can depower. Because that's Butcher says they've all got to go. So does the end of this series is a reset map where no one has superpowers?
Could be. I don't know.
See where it goes.
All right, Butcher's living more memories of himself beating people and then accidentally hitting Lenny. And his father rewards him for beating his school teacher, his principal. I don't know what they call it over there.
The headmaster.
Yeah. And then the older butcher tells him, tells Lenny, like, or tries to tell Lenny, like, or himself, no, don't do this, you know, don't go down this road. But he can't communicate with himself.
It's fucked up because what triggers Billy is the headmaster saying you're going to end up like your father. And then he immediately behaves like his father.
Yeah.
And then there's his father to sweep in and give him his first beer, his first, you know, on the above the board beer, and talks to him about how proud he is for, you know, learning a tough lesson. So it's like, it's a double whammy. It's a triple whammy. Yeah. It's like a real mind fuck for a 16, 17 year old kid to go through.
Yeah. The positive reinforcement, the negative reinforcement, it's all there. It's all fucking him up.
The thing he desperately doesn't want to be, he's becoming. Yep. Yeah. It's, like I said, I think some of that stuff is done really well. Mm-hmm.
So then Soldier Boy and Huey run across a priest and a nun with a broken down car. Soldier Boy ends up shooting them both to death, which is probably not the right call. It's tough to say here, but they continue on. Like, what was the vibe of this scene? I couldn't quite get a handle on this one. Like,
I thought Soldier Boy
jumps up and starts biting Huey. I'm like, wait, A, he's superpowered. So would this even hurt if she wasn't superpowered? And B, like, she might be superpowered and this might have been a ploy, but why? And how does it connect to Mindstorm? I don't know.
I think Mindstorm mentally took, I think you're supposed to understand that Mindstorm mentally took control over them and was using them to lure them in a trap and kill them. But your point to what end is well taken, because like neither one of these people had any kind of ability to threaten either Soldier Boy or Huey at present.
So is he just freaking out because some crazy lady jumped on him?
Yeah, I think he would.
sure. Okay. So it doesn't. Actually,
but the other thing. Well, that's the other thing. Is like, I think that supers can be hurt. It's just on a different scale. Like that might feel like the way if a grown woman jumped on your throat and chewed on it and like she's trying to kill you, that'd be very painful. Maybe it feels like a bee sting to him, but it's still noxious. You know, is it still something you don't want to continue? The other theory
describes Frenchie's noodle arms makes me think that a bite from a normal human would not do much, but okay.
True. This is true. The other darker explanation is Soldier Boy's jump of the gun, and this was the nun's like flight or fight response. Like flipped the coin and handed on flight, and she just went berserk and tried, like, she's gonna die anyway. Because these guys got guns and they just killed the father. Mm-hmm. I'm 50-50 on it myself. I don't know which is is this an authentic Mindstorm plot or Soldier Boy jumping the gun?
That's what I mean. I couldn't quite get a handle on the scene, but it was still fun regardless.
Huey's trying to cross himself. But
does he? I missed it.
I think, yeah, it's like it was kind of like a combination of like wiping blood off of him and crossing himself and him being way too, I don't know, Protestant or atheist to pull it off. But it's just a mess. It's just a fucking mess.
All right. Starlight and Homelander both continue their smear campaigns against each other. Her on social media, him at a rally. Where Homelander's speech is going pretty well until he thinks he sees Soldier Boy in the audience and panics. And he goes out to a barn where he drinks milk. I want to say directly from a cow, but it's cow to bucket to Homelander.
I thought he was going to go right from the nipple
right. If I hadn't seen this shot in the trailer, no, and seen the bucket, I would have thought that too. But
yeah, he's drinking out of a bucket. Yeah.
Newman catches him and tells him to get his shit together and offers him a favor in return for it. Which this is another one of those, we don't know what the favor is, right? There's a piece of paper and he sees it and it shocks him, but we don't know what it is.
You know, I've always thought that when they were going for the Homelander being obsessed with milk, that it's obviously there was some mommy issues here. But also I thought they were trying to imply this like this obscure kind of like white nationalists. They have all these ways to signal to themselves, but one of it is like drinking a glass of milk because it's white, and I guess it's some kind of hidden barb aimed at Asians who on average are more lactose intolerant than Europeans. It's crazy shit. But I think it's like, you remember when he was having the Smeagol Gollum discussion with himself in a mirror, he talks about like, once you eliminate all your flaws, you'll be perfect, like marble.
Yeah.
I think it goes deeper than just a racial component. I think that he embodies this kind of like white equals perfection, flawless, clean, and like milk right out of the tap is like not contaminated and pure and perfect. And it's like, mm-hmm. I'm not saying there's not a racial component to Homelander's craziness.
Or a mommy issue. Yeah.
I think when you dig deep, it's like he just wants to be perfect and flawless and clean. And I like that. Yeah, I think that's what they're going with this. Anyway, that was my little analysis.
Yeah, makes sense.
Victoria Newman, the paper she gives him.
Yeah. What is it?
This is the address, the Minnesota address. Okay. And I was just saying, like, I don't think you did you have any theories about what that was, or were you on the, like, this is probably Ryan's camp?
No, in the moment I had no idea.
Gotcha. Okay.
But yeah, it makes a hell of a lot of sense there if it's Ryan's address.
Victoria Newman and a Homelander team up. That's kind of been pointing that direction. Boy, it seems like it's the classic frog and scorpion situation for kind of both of them.
Sure.
But yeah, I guess
they're both dangerous people. But I really want to know, can she threaten Homelander physically? I wanted to see her attempt it in this scene to fight back.
I've been thinking about that, too. Would that feel super anticlimactic if it's at some point she just blows his head up? And it turns out she could have done it all the time.
She exploded his head in this scene? Of course.
But it's not obvious why she can't, because she can do it to Starlight, who certainly not on the same league of Homelander, but in that neighborhood, and did it casually, just with like without any strain at all, popped her a blood vessel in her nose. So
yeah,
you don't have to explode his head.
Could be effective.
That's the thing. You don't even have to explode his head. You just have to like tear open an artery in his brain for long enough for him to bleed out. You know.
Yeah, I mean, the guy who's already scared because he might not be the most powerful soup on the block. Yeah, that'd be pretty effective, but she doesn't go for that. Instead of the stick.
And he doesn't seem like he's very threatened by it. I will say that. I don't know if he's got inside information about her powers and the relative to his, but he feels like he's unpoppable.
Mm-hmm. All right, A-Train wakes up and Ashley gives him a story to tell the press about what happened at Herogasm. Also tells him they gave him Blue Hawk's heart, I guess, and they've got his next movie lined up for him, which is about as white a movie as I could possibly imagine. It's written by Julian Fellows, hopefully, they say. And it stars Hanks as the track coach who spots the talented running star and ushers him into stardom.
I saw how Baron Fellows dealt with turn of the century racism in New York City. The Gilded Age. It wasn't great. And the whole like, oh, you're out there slanging the yay, and then your coach played by Tom Hanks shows you a more or less savage way when I mean, this is so fucking multidimensionally offensive that I almost wonder if it's even still appropriate. Like, to put a racist super cop's heart in a black man and then say you're going to sell his story that of his brother, you know, training him and doing all this and turn it and whitewash all that and give him a drug back. Like I said, I get the satire and all that stuff, but sometimes it can be too much where it's like, doesn't even feel like it's from a good place anymore.
Gotcha.
And I don't know. I don't know. Like I said, I'm not the one to make that judgment, but like, whoo, they are flying pretty close to the racist sun right here. Poe's law, like we've talked about Poe's law. This is where shit like this is where you start to, you know, I can't tell the difference between these two pictures kind of business.
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that this comes off the back of the scene where Homelander is, you know, giving his speech, which is just the worst.
Right.
And is so it's not even close to real life. This is shit that people were and are actually saying about other people in our real world. So, it's fucked up.
But it does solve A-Train's health problems.
Yeah, he might be able to run now. He's got no more heart disease because he doesn't have his old stinky heart.
Yeah. Will there be complications? I don't know. I don't know. We'll be, there definitely is going to be a mental and psychological implications. And I wonder, I could use a plot more of him and his brother next season.
Yeah.
Because they both have a form of healing to do. You know, his brother's going to have to learn how to live as a paraplegic, and A-Train's going to have to learn how to live with himself. Yeah. and what he's done and what he's a part of.
Yeah, we'll see if his black body rejects a white man's heart. I'm sure they'll have some
not a kind of, white man's some heart.
Insightful. Well, yeah,
it's the a, white yeah, man's heart. It, like, yes, a Blue Hawk was the white man. He's dead now. We're all safe.
The only other more racist heart he could possibly get would be Homelander's. But all right, Frenchie figures out that it was a Russian nerve agent that knocked out Soldier Boy in the lab footage they have of him. MM sees a Facebook post of his daughter's new dad with her, Todd, at the Homelander event and storms out the door. Kimiko asks Frenchie to dance so she can deliver the bad news that she's going to get her powers back, and then has him read this message that she showed Annie, which is sweet and very convincing on why I think Kimiko should get her powers back, because she wants them back now. This is her choice, and she wants to protect the people she loves. I think it was very touching.
It's touching, but it's also like, how many shows have we watched with the theme of no matter how powerful you are, I mean, this is fucking The Incredibles. Like, no matter how powerful you are, it's not a guarantee that you can save and protect everyone you love. And nor is that really your job. This is played as a heartwarming thing, but I wonder if it's going to, in typical boys fashion, be something really, really awful.
Yeah, it could. I mean, she's getting back into a fight that is very dangerous. And it might get her or Frenchie inadvertently killed.
It does seem like that they are going for a pretty strong statement of, like, it isn't V that does it, because Starlight has been portrayed. Maeve has been portrayed as a person who is largely uncorrupted, and just wants to, you know, do good or be a normal person. So overall, I think the thesis of the V makes you evil is shaky, but it would be like the boys to make Kimiko the exception that proves the rule.
Okay. I think Kimiko's going evil.
Could. I don't know. I'm just wondering. I'm just saying that, like, the boys do a lot of turning Shinola into shit. Sure. So.
All right. We'll see. We've kind of haven't talked much about the MM stuff because it started like a few scenes ago with Homelander's speech, but we'll get to that here in a bit. The other thing is, like, are they going to go back to Russia? Like, do they actually need to go back to Russia again to get this nerve agent to help knock out Soldier Boy? And can they do it enough time?
Like, yeah.
I don't think so.
Unless they end in a big cliffhanger and they're going to resolve this in season 4, sure, which they could do. That's not been the boys' style. Usually they come to a natural conclusion to the action and then set up the threats for the next season. But there's nothing to say. I mean, that's only a 2-season history to go on, so there's nothing to say they couldn't.
I like that format better. I don't like to be left with a lot of cliffhangers about what's going to happen. Those are the worst kind.
I like the action being over and the suspense being what now what? You know, how are people going to react? What are people going to do with the new state of the board? That old school tied up on the train tracks with the train coming.
Yeah.
Kind of played out with the Dudley Do-Right era, which was before my time. So.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to Annie sneaking into Vought and getting Compound V. And she also sees the side effects associated with V24, the temp stuff, which is calling for alarm. They seem pretty bad.
Yeah, they're talking about lesions, and I think that black oil was part of it. Bottom line, they underlined it for us. Lethal after 3 to 5 doses.
Yep. Then Black Noir sees more animatics of himself being approached by Stan Edgar to betray Soldier Boy in Nicaragua and agreeing to do it. The whole team takes him down. Soldier Boy beats Black Noir viciously during that. And then his animated friends tell Black Noir, you need to go face Soldier Boy.
Feel the fear and do it anyway. It's great life advice, honestly.
Sure.
They beat Black Noir's brains out.
Yeah, they really do.
is that why he, like, they explain this physical scarring by him being, his face being held down on a burning Jeep. It's not clear to me why he doesn't just heal perfectly like Kimiko does when she gets her, you know, compound B. But they, are they also explaining his mental damage?
Because he's, so why he doesn't talk? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, his brains literally are beat back out of his head. He scooped them in as best he could. It just healed wrong.
I think so. Yeah.
It's pretty grim shit.
Yeah, it is. Like, I don't know. I guess you can live without certain portions of your brain. It's just typically when they take out those portions that are bad, but you can still live without, they don't do it with a pointed shield.
Sure. And
several bashes to the head.
Sure.
So he got lucky here, I'd say.
Yeah. But also, like, when we're talking about those traumatic head injuries where people's, you know, like, you know, take a railroad track to tie through the brain, or they get a lobotomy or something, it does tend to change their personalities, and not usually for the better, you know. Sure. Non-contrast, you remove portions of people's brains, changes them.
Oh yeah, that whole thing about, like, oh, the human brain is only in 10% use is complete bullshit. You use 100% right. of your brain for various yeah. functions all the time.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So I don't suggest anybody go pull out 90% of their brain.
It's not just a useless 90% of your brain you just take out.
I also love the way they picture Stan Edgar as this, like, nut eating chipmunk or whatever he is. I can't tell exactly what animal
I think he was credited as a meerkat.
Oh, is he? Okay, all right.
Yeah,
he's just, like, so cute, so lovable, but, you know, he's sinister
and not giving a fuck about Black Noir's peanut allergy or yeah, almond allergy why? Or forget yeah
I just such an asshole about it.
He just is. Everything about him is provocative, man. It's how he keeps these soups under his thumb. I don't know how he backs okay. that shit up. That's the other question I've still got. Burning question I've had since the beginning of last season.
I think it was maybe Stan Edgar who blew his shot at being the Eddie Murphy, Axel Foley stand-in.
That's entirely possible.
Mm-hmm.
Just like Stan Edgar is behind the betrayal of Soldier Boy. It could be a lot of Soldier Boy's fucking with his team was on the orders of Vought. Because, like, you know, like, that's the other thing. It's like, it seemed like for whatever reason, Stan didn't want Black Noir to take his mask off. And yeah. have a public life. I don't know why.
I don't know either.
Probably something to do with racism, not uh-huh. wanting the black man on the team, but they haven't come out. And then what's that's really fucked up coming from Stan Edgar, right?
Right, right. Or maybe he does want the black man on the team, but he knows the public doesn't. And so right. he's trying this to hide his identity so he can be on the team. Who knows? Yep. He's still kind of a mystery to me, Stan. I would like to yes. know a lot more about him. And he's been sidelined yes, he this whole season. Maybe that's what I'm not feeling about this season is Stan Edgar. Where is he?
Yeah, I have
he had a couple I've missed, of good scenes with Homelander, but that was it.
I've missed Edgar too. And that's kind of like his whole sum of last season too. It's like he's just
yeah.
sitting there in the wings, and you know he's going to do something cool. You're just waiting.
Mm-hmm. All right, MM confronts Todd about the Homelander rally that he took his daughter to. And they argue about Homelander's lies, and then Todd goes too far with his words, and MM punches him right in front of his daughter. I thought MM handled this remarkably well up until the punch, and maybe
right
even
up.
Past the punch, honestly. Like, this guy, the shit that he pulled, like saying, oh, she needs a father, like that was a line you can't fucking cross, Todd, and you should have known. But right up until that, I was like, wow, okay, he's threading a fucking needle here that I don't know that I could thread for sure.
Look, I've got some experience co-parenting with someone who has diametrically opposing views to me.
Right.
And I gotta say, I was too impressed by the way Mother's Milk was keeping this, like, you know, not about the thing, but about the daughter and about his wishes and the safety and all that kind of stuff and being assertive. But you can't punch the stepdad out. That yeah. traumatizes daughter. Like, it's showing, like, you know, if you're wanting to draw a contrast between lifestyles and then you end up being a violent idiot in the view of your child, you're just hamstringing yourself. And the thing is, like, Mother's Milk doesn't think he did the right thing. You can tell.
Oh, no.
That he sure. regrets. But yeah, he just can't. Yeah, co-parenting in those situations is hard. You kind of have to do it perfectly all the time. No pressure.
the thing that's aggravating about this, the final part of the scene, is that Todd is right when he says, look, this girl needs a father and you are not here, because like Mother's Milk has, look, I know he has his own trauma in his past that he's dealing with his grandfather being killed by Soldier Boy, and that giving him OCD, but like, I don't know, dude, you walked out on your daughter again to just go do the thing you felt you needed to do. Yeah, that's not what good fathers do, I would say.
Yeah, but Todd's running his mouth reckless.
I know.
He's like,
sure.
Yeah, that's some heinous shit to say. Somebody's got to under the circumstances, especially I'm sure he knows a lot of his background. Just like cozying up to any kind of soup would be bad news, let alone this Homelander guy. But Yeah,
it's a good scene though. All right, Homelander finds Starlight in Vought Tower after she's, while she's stealing the V, she's got it on her. And he tells her that she's going to go on TV and recant all of her lies. And she refuses because she's not scared of him anymore. And Homelander threatens Huey. And then Starlight reveals she's been streaming their entire conversation live on her social media. And Homelander is caught completely off guard by that.
I always love these reactions where when the abuser's caught red-handed on the record, their first thing is outrage at the betrayal of the revealing of the abuse.
Right. You know, we're not supposed to record when we're running lines. Come on.
This isn't the way. This is the way family treats, this isn't the way. Yeah, it's pretty transparent.
Maybe the reason I love that my two favorite characters are Butcher and Homelander is because of how they can contort their faces. Because, man, I've seen Butcher do some crazy shit with his face even this season, but Homelander gives him a run for his money in this scene when he is caught and he's like trying to smile, but he is so angry and so surprised that it is not a smile. It is just a whole face contortion.
Yeah,
he's so good.
He's great. And all the shit he's saying is probably stuff that's not going to play with his base. I think that's his real problem, is that this woman said that, you know, he's small and he's weak and he's afraid. And also he's murdered a hero. And then he admits to threatening a civilian. Like, it's like I said, I'm always amazed at how people can spin their way out of these things. And like it's the defense of like, well, they betrayed a confidence. This was a private family matter, but it works. It works, right? Because like one of the worst things you can do within a trusting situation is to betray that trust. And like, it's the first thing that people can jump on with, like, well, this shouldn't have been like, you know, if we'd have gotten a full context, or if we'd have seen with Starlight, or yeah, maybe he's doing that, but like those people are child molesters and whatnot. Like,
yeah, what about him? What about
yeah,
him? Sure.
Yeah. No, but it'll be interesting to see if this is the downfall or if it's going to be something that the Homelander base kind of rallies around.
Yeah. I mean, she does have a massive social media following. So
190 million.
I mean, that's obscene. That's a ton of people.
It's more than half of Americans seeing it live. It's kind of crazy. Well, I mean, I'm sure not everybody was watching it, but you know, it's a lot. That's a lot of exposure.
Yeah. She'll post it on her YouTube channel later. It'll get around.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Soldier Boy, Huey, and Huey track Mindstorm to this barn, where Huey teleports Mindstorm back to Butcher and asks him to please wake up Butcher so that they can both go home. Offers to take him literally anywhere he wants if he just does this.
I couldn't help but notice Huey using the Chris Pratt calming right hand technique. I see that. Yeah, like, totally. I can't, like, this is so prevalent in media now. It's like causing me to go insane. Like, I'm seeing it everywhere. Maybe Chris Pratt. Yeah. I don't know. I don't think Chris Pratt pioneered it, but oh my God, I just watched too much Jurassic Park or Jurassic World.
Popularized it. Certainly.
Popularized it. Yeah. Perfected it.
Uh-huh.
Weaponized that's the, it. Yeah. You can use it against a crazy mentalist now. Mm-hmm. works naked. Works mother naked. this power. Naked, yeah, I'm gonna try it out next time. Someone gets really angry at me in public, I'm just gonna put my right hand out and be like, "Hey, easy. I see you. Easy there."
Yeah.
I just got clothes. I just got clothes for both of us.
Right? I really love that part of the scene where he's like, we don't have to do this naked. You know, we can put clothes on here. I brought some for you.
Huey's inability to teleport his clothes is...
I love it.
It still makes me laugh every single time it happens.
Yeah. Especially because he teleports the other person's clothes off.
Right, and then, yes. And it's it's all... Yeah. It's shocking, awkward for everyone.
All right, Butcher relives more of his memories, the one of him leaving Lenny behind with their father, and Lenny eventually gets a gun and starts speaking directly to Butcher, the real Butcher we know in his memories, telling him that he gets everyone killed, and then he blows his brains out. And Butcher wakes up at exactly that moment, and Soldier Boy catches up to them, finds out something from Mindstorm, which we're not sure of in this scene, but we know later on. And then caves his head in.
This scene still less traumatic than in Falcon and Winter Soldier, where the new Captain America beats a dude's brains out with the actual Captain America shield.
Oh yeah, symbolically less traumatic.
Yeah, just all around. Like that was like okay. Truly like, oh my god, this is a sullying of something sacred. This guy's just got a shitty shield, but. It did make me think of those, like, and if anything, Disney went way harder. Like the fucking, this was a fairly antiseptic or aseptic. I can't remember how you pronounce that. Death on the boys, but like they really leaned into it on the Disney Plus show. Like that shield was dripping with blood and gore at the end of it.
This one there's a bag over the head, so it's not
seen
in quite the detail.
Almost tastefully done. Compared to the Disney shit. Yeah. What Lenny's doing here is like, you've killed everyone you've loved, me, Becca, and you're going to, and the one person who's tried to keep from becoming a monster, you've drug him down to his level. It's amazing how brutally effective this is and how it doesn't even matter 5 minutes from now. Mm-hmm. It's going to completely be swept away because for his single minded focus on revenge.
Yeah. No, it's sad and chilling.
And Butcher does really like, we've seen him do unhinged work before, but this is really good. Him pleading with his past self to stay and to not abandon his brother and not getting killed. Is pretty effective.
Yeah. You rarely see Butcher, emotionally compromised. It happened with Becca a time or two, but that's about it.
Makes you think what would happen if something happened to Huey.
All right, we're back at the Legends house where the crew is thinking about their experiences. Butcher gets a call from Starlight who says the Tip V is lethal at 3 to 5 doses. He promises he'll tell Huey, but of course he doesn't, telling him instead that they're going to get more of the Tip V and finish the job.
Another great scene by Urban, because his facial acting here, where you clearly see him have a moment of clarity. Yep. And he knows absolutely what he's doing is wrong, even by his standards. And he does it anyway.
There was that moment, what was it, in season 2 early on, maybe, where he was on the phone with Becca, maybe.
Yeah, and told her definitely. He definitely, I forget what it was, a promise about that he was going to make about Ryan.
Yeah.
And you're right. It's a very similar moment where he's doing something that he, even by his moral code, recognizes as evil and wrong.
Yes.
And he's going to do it anyway because it's getting in the way of something that he wants. Last season, it was getting Becca back and keeping her safe. This season, it's killing Homelander.
Or it might have been payback for the vastly subpar fish and chips from Long John Silver's. I don't know. One of the two.
That's what it's like, this fucker trying to pass us off as fish and chips. It's the V for you, boy. Yeah. Right.
See if your super stomach can handle that fish and chips.
Yeah, people from the UK, don't go to Long John Silver's.
I don't know that I've ever heard Long John Silver's name mentioned on a television show.
Are they the Almond Joy of fast food?
They absolutely are.
Because I'm not down with this one. I went to the mattresses for Almond Joy.
Oh, I'm not doing it. Diametrically opposed, man. As a kid, I went to Long John Silver so much. My dad would come home with their fucking 10-piece chicken fingers.
Sure, yeah. And
the whole family was feast.
You're eating.
I'm eating fowl? The chicken.
Well, that's why you like it so much. You should try their main dish, dude.
Anyone
can fry chicken. It's the they really murder cod and shrimp. That's the to think
you know
about
what I how loved? The true treat of Long John Silver's is the crunchies. It's the pieces of batter that they dump into whatever dish you get that are like a side. They're a side on their own.
You can request the cholesterol bombs. Yes, you can.
Yeah, God, I love those.
And while we're praising Long John, their hush puppies are pretty fucking good.
Not bad.
Not
bad. Seasoning on those is pretty good.
It's just a damn. I just weep at the metric ton of biomass extracted from our oceans that went through Long John Silver's. It's a shame because they really should have just stuck with chicken and hush puppies.
Right. Thematically, though, I feel like they couldn't.
We got a better, more ethical Chick-fil-A, but we got Long John instead.
All right. Let's move on. Starlight continues to call Huey, who is not answering because he teleported away from his phone at some point, apparently. Starlight gives Kimiko Compound V, and Frenchie administers the shot, and then Kimiko gets her powers back, just immediately heals up.
Yep. And it's like, we were wondering when Victoria Newman shot up her daughter and her back started doing all that weird pebbly stuff. Like, was that indication of like a power she's getting? It looked like that's just V. That's what Kimiko did too. So,
yeah.
So I wonder when they're going to get back
of that, right?
Yeah, that's one of those submarine plots that maybe she's hanging out with Stan Edgar off in the wings. Doubt it.
Yeah.
Unless Stan's behind this whole thing.
Maybe.
I have there's something been tickling about. I haven't figured out all the moving pieces, but I'm growing certain that Stan is going to step out of the shadows at the end of the season and show that he has actually manipulated everything. That Victoria Newman turning against him was actually helping him out in some weird way, and that this was him taking all the pieces like Soldier Boy and Homelander and the old Payback team off the table so he could have his own more controllable, stable brand of heroes that he could keep. That's one of my guesses.
Yeah, we'll see. I can't connect those dots for you, but the show might.
Me either.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the Shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if Very Special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. And then final scene here is Homelander getting a call from Soldier Boy, who tells him, "I am your father."
Yep. And like I said, I'm guessing, I looked up 715 County Highway to Aldrich, Minnesota, and it's just in the middle of nowhere. There's a house, if you go on Google Maps Street View, a quarter mile up. But yeah, it's just an empty place in Minnesota that they probably don't want a whole bunch of people going and bothering anybody there. But yeah, it'd be a great out of the way place to hide a super kid. Be a great place for a safe house.
Yeah, I mean, this scene here, the way they end this, is kind of one of the things that sealed me thinking this was a weaker episode. Because it feels cliched, but also it feels far less dramatic than some of the stuff they could have done, and they just, like, it just ends there, you know, as if this was supposed to be the big shocker, and I just wasn't as shocked by it as the episode wanted me to be. But
oh, really? Because I was like, I didn't see it coming. You're right.
Yeah,
it's like
I didn't see it coming either, but it's like, okay, I've seen this many times before as the big reveal. So
let me ask you this, because the reveal maybe is not as interesting as the implications. Do you think that Soldier Boy is telling the truth about the shame of it is if they kept me around, I of course would have let you eventually take the spotlight. What father wouldn't?
I don't know. Nothing I've seen from this guy tells me that he's an upstanding citizen or father, but who knows? I've never seen him interact with a child, so.
I agree. I think he's manipulating Homelander.
Yeah.
And I don't think he gives a shit about his having kids, or he's never, like, we had that scene where Homelander was talking about how he used to fantasize having kids with Maeve and how perfect they'd be and what a good father. Like, Soldier Boy has, he just jerked off into a cup where Homelander actually had sex with Becca. Am I remembering that correctly? That they,
I can't remember.
I mean, it was rape, but I
obviously,
and I wonder if that's another, like, opposite of crazy being still crazy. Like, well, yeah, instead of being a V2 baby, there's going to be like a real mother involved that was going to nurture him. And like I said, the details are horrifying, but I wonder if that is another indication of the opposite of crazy, still crazy Vought approach.
Yeah, I don't know. It certainly has echoes of the Maeve stuff, right? Where he's talking, I'm going to harvest your eggs and create super babies from them. Uh-huh. Well, he himself is basically a product of that, it seems.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because
it wasn't done. I mean, that's weird because, like, his Soldier Boy's like, genetic experiments, maybe jerk off in a cup. All right, here you go.
Sure.
Like, it didn't what give much thought to that genetic. Yeah. Yeah, experiments, the genetics, yeah, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. There's a lot to like in this episode, but yeah, this final note didn't do it for me.
Did you notice there's a... you didn't. There's no fucking way. You noticed there's a post-credit scene?
No. No, there is.
The only reason I did is because I let the credits play because I wanted to see who the animated Bucky Beaver was. Uh-huh. And then when I got that answer, I just let it play out. And then after the credits, all the animated characters from Black Noir's Vision come out onto like a stage and take a bow. It's like a fifth, five, six.
Oh,
it's,
okay.
It's nothing. But I just wanted to point it out. Gotcha. In case anybody else saw it.
I was worried I missed something important. Nope.
So I guess that'll do it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you have feedback for us, you can leave it at our Department of Homelander Security email box, DHS@baldmove.com. That's DHS@baldmove.com. We'll be back with a separate feedback show to consider your feedback, either going into the finale episode, or we might save it for a wrap up after the fact, depending on, again, the timing and how much feedback we get. So DHS@baldmove.com. Give us your thoughts. We'll be back next week for the finale episode. Grandfather, father, son, square down, I think. Square, mm-hmm. hoedown, square dance. Things are going to be square. Things are going to be down. It's going to be awesome. We'll see if I'm right. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.